You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up tonight after 7, it's Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. Tonight, it was one of the closest and most contentious elections of our lifetime, and then the Supreme Court stepped in. Remembering the Bush v. Gore decision this week on Ken Rudin's Political Junkie, tonight after 7 on the Ideas Network.
First, there was a time not all that long ago that Milwaukee's position as a manufacturing stronghold had declined and the loss of industry was taking its toll on the city.
But as our next guest outlines, in the past 30 years, a combination of planning, investment, and inspiration have led to a successful revitalization centered in the city's Menominee Valley.
Colin Woodard joins us now. He's a Politico magazine contributing editor, where he wrote the recent piece, How Milwaukee Shook Off the Rust. He's also author of the book, American Character, A History of the Epic Struggle Between Individual Liberty and the Common Good. Colin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Now, you focus in your piece on the Menominee Valley area of Milwaukee, and as you describe it, I mean, this sounds like it could have been the poster child for the phrase Rust Belt. Can you describe it at, I guess, the low point?
Yes. I mean, many of your listeners probably remember it firsthand, but what was described to me is, you know, you come in to the city from, you know, Chicago or from the west, and you're on those overpasses and viaducts or at the interstate, and the great thing greeting you at the gate was this deteriorated and largely derelict industrial zone that had become the repository for everything the rest of the city didn't want, be it scrapyards and junk piles and polluting industries, and this enormous former rail yard complex, the Milwaukee Roads Complex, all lying by the late 1980s, derelict over an enormous, many, many tens of acres, and absolutely falling apart. And this was what greeted everybody, and was not considered the best advertisement for Milwaukee. It certainly seemed to say Rust Belt to people.
That's the before picture. Let's talk about the after picture, and then we'll spend most of our time thinking about how we connect the dots between the two. But how would you describe it today?
Well, it's remarkable. What drew my attention was that a lot of cities are abandoning their industrial zones, trying to attract different purposes and tenants to them. Here's a place that's been transformed into sort of a model for what a 21st century industrial zone might look like in a city. It's sort of a kind of an eco industrial park, you might say. They used design standards. It combines recreational uses and the Hank Aaron Trail and wetlands and stormwater drainage parks and wildlife with manufacturing and all of the things that light manufacturing needs. So it's sort of a investing in sort of the future of manufacturing in a way that few cities have been doing in the United States of late.
Now, let's talk about why that is. As you say, a common alternative for a blighted former industrial area like that might be to ignore it as much as possible, or maybe we can convert it into some trendy residential rehabbed factories. What happened in this part of Milwaukee, this Menominee Valley area, that set it off on this different, maybe unique path?
Well, there were several strands of things that were coming together and happening in the late 1980s and early 1990s that sort of came together at the right moment, the right synergies to make this all happen. One was, in short, that the Brewers and Bud Selig were looking for a new stadium and ended up planting it at the upper end of the Menominee Valley. And when they did that, it had the accidental effect of suddenly increasing the speculative value of that enormous old abandoned railway yard I described, the Milwaukee Road Complex, which had just been sitting there. And there became, therefore, suddenly it was pushed onto everybody's agenda, what should become of this place? Because the land management company that held control of it wanted to make it into an entertainment district. You know, people would finish the game or before the game go over there to restaurants and bars and all that. And it became the question, is that what we should really be doing with this? At the same time, the 16th Street Health Clinic, a wide-minded community health clinic, was also dealing with various contamination issues and other issues in the near south side. And that had drawn their attention as their then director had been looking sort of broadly at what affected the health of clients. They were realizing that a lot of people in that area needed a safe place to play and, you know, recreate and indeed work and have less pollution and contamination. And you had this enormous sort of forgotten industrial zone right next to there. So that was drawing their attention, and what they brought to the table was some planning around what should this place look like. They ended up convening lots of architects from around the city to sort of brainstorm on what this place might look like instead, but with sort of human health and environmental ideas in the mix. And the third component was that you had, at the time, Mayor John Norquist was your mayor, who later went on to be the head of the Congress of New Urbanism and was sort of a new urbanist city planner thinker in his own right. And with all of this mix of things in front of him, he brought the city administration to try to actually draw up plans and ideas as to what would be the best use for this with all this going on. And the result of all that was people had this vision for this sort of, you know, eco industrial park that would be attractive to industries, elsewhere in Milwaukee, elsewhere in the country, and maybe around the world, while also bringing in recreational values and making it a place that people could actually use for other purposes, a sort of rethink of things. So it's those three unlikely things coming together all at once over a pretty long 10-15-year time period, which is often the kind of time periods it takes for some of these big changes in cities.
Talking to Colin Woodard from Politico Magazine, talking about his piece, How Milwaukee Shook Off the Rust, talking about the Menominee Valley part of Milwaukee and how it turned, he says, from Rust Belt into modern eco-industrial landscape where people actually can live and recreate too. And Colin, I think probably a lot of people are looking at your piece for lessons. Is this something we can do elsewhere, in Milwaukee, in cities in Wisconsin, in cities around the Midwest? Sounds like one lesson. You just mentioned a few players. You also write about a tribal group being involved. It seems like a lesson is a lot of people really have to be at the table. This isn't something that can be done by a mayor or an entrepreneur or just one group or person planning this.
Correct. I mean, this series that this article is part of is called the What Works series, which is looking at successful things that are happening in cities all over the place. Sometimes they're dealing with transportation, sometimes with revitalizing a downtown, and of course, in this situation, with sort of the reindustrialization of a zone. But what seems to be a common denominator, even though what ended up being some of the criteria that made each of these things work, what I've discovered while traveling around the country writing these is that often there's this ethos of cooperation that comes together somehow, and it almost always involves some variety of what people call a public-private partnership, where you get the city and public entities and nonprofits and the corporate and business sector all coming together to try to do something that furthers the interests of the whole community. And it's in those moments, and the vehicles take very different shapes in different cities, but that is almost always a common theme you see behind these sort of big, successful projects. And I'm glad you mentioned the tribe, the Potawatomi. That was another fortunate thing that happened at the same time. They were coming around the late 80s and early 90s wanting to build a bingo hall that eventually became their casino. But they were, like many things, whatever you didn't want elsewhere in the city was often sent to the valley. So they found themselves in the valley, but they were highly successful and, civic-minded and wanted to invest and help this change happen in their return to their old neighborhood from the, 1700s. And so they ended up investing and being players as well. So that was another important strand in your case.
Talking to Politico Magazine contributing editor Colin Woodard about his recent piece, How Milwaukee Shook Off the Rust.
And we want to hear from you on this. What signs do you see of Milwaukee's manufacturing renaissance and how well the city is balancing that change with cultural and environmental concerns? If you've been a longtime Milwaukee resident, what changes have you seen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we're continuing our conversation with Politico Magazine contributing editor Colin Woodard about his recent article, How Milwaukee Shook Off the Rust.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see signs that Milwaukee's manufacturing strength is returning? Do you think that's a good direction for the city to be going in? Are you involved in this Menominee Valley success story, as our guest describes it? Do you live near there? Do you work there? Do you have a business there? Call in now, 800-642-1234. 1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Colin, I think maybe sometimes people might think Milwaukee and success story and think, well, But I keep hearing bad news. Like, there are all these bad headlines of violence, urban problems. Do we overlook the success stories in cities like Milwaukee?
Well, I think success stories often get overlooked, especially out in the away from the centers of national media, where there people from the outside aren't looking as often, and maybe when you're living in the middle of it all, sometimes these things aren't recognized as well. These things happen slowly over a long period of time, and sort of as you're living among it, sometimes it's not seen. You have to sort of take a step back to kind of realize some of the things that have happened. And certainly Milwaukee, has its problems, and recent events, have shown that, and it's been in the news for not good reasons. But this is something really interesting if you're, looking around the country at things that are happening in cities. This is a really interesting and fresh development. And indeed, the city is trying to replicate the model from the Menominee Valley, first in the Harbor District area, where there's a sort of nonprofit in an earlier phase trying to envision and think about what that area might look like as a working port that would have some of these other values in it, and also in an earlier phase of things up the 30th Street corridor.
Let's go to our callers now. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi. You mentioned your comments about the Brewer Stadium kind of starting to revitalize some of the valley there. I was wondering if you could speak to any parallels you might see between that and the Buck Stadium that's going to be happening in the next couple of years here.
Marcus, thanks for the call. I don't know, Colin, if you're following the new basketball stadium in Milwaukee, but do you have general lessons about a good way to leverage a sports facility here?
Yeah, I have not been following the Buck Stadium story from afar, but in general, as I've traveled around the country, often sports stadiums show up and in the story of the city, and I'd have to say that more often than not, it's sort of a story of a wasted opportunity in terms of how to do economic development. I won't pick out any specific examples, but oftentimes, cities only have so much money to spend and direct towards efforts to do something new and revitalize things, or partner with the private sector to do something that would be catalytic. And these stadiums cost a lot of money, and often the public basically puts all its money in this one basket. And the return on that investment is often not as large as some of these other partnerships and things you see that are a little more complicated, that require more time, that have more moving parts. And I guess the lesson I've seen there is that a lot of stadiums were built in, say, the 1990s and early 2000s, and that was going to be the great silver bullet. And it often hasn't been. So that's the general lesson I'd give. I know nothing about the specifics, though, with the Buck Stadium.
Marcus, thanks for that call. We'll go next to Melanie from Wauwatosa. Melanie, hi.
Hi. So...
Go ahead, Melanie.
I worked on the Menominee River Valley, and I've been working there for about 4 years, and I just wanted to say they really do a lot to try to include us as workers in the factories, sending out emails, asking people for suggestions and arts, and having classes at the community center down there, at the Eco Center for cooking, and getting people involved in the Hank Aaron 5K and everything like that. And even lately, we've been having food trucks, so we've introduced those down into the area in the past couple of months. So it really is a community, and all the businesses seem to interact together really well to make things happen and bring cool new things to the area.
Melanie, thanks a lot for sharing your experience there. And Colin, that isn't something you usually think of, industrial development and community engagement with the workers and all these available things to do.
Right, exactly. It's sort of like the model. You see this kind of model and structure and sort of cultural attitude in a lot of the new high-tech industries, the Google campuses and the cool startups that form in different places, be it around 128 in Boston or satellites in Manchester, New Hampshire, or wherever it is. But a lot of those lessons about how to do a work and maybe even a work play, and in some places work play live environment, I think are starting to be applied in very different contexts. And now in this case, you're starting to see it in an industrial context. I mean, nobody lives in the Menominee Valley, so you're missing the final sort of stage and component of it. But people are realizing that you can create spaces, that there's no reason that industrial zones have to be, you know, these awful places to work, because, you know, it's nice to be able to walk out of your industrial job and have trails and places to eat your lunch and all that too. And people are starting to realize with a lot of industries, there's absolutely no reason you can't do that. And it actually makes you attractive to businesses, you know, at home and afar.
Time for one more quick call. Thanks, Melanie. We've got Steve in Lake Mills. Steve, hi.
Yeah, hi there. I think that in order to move forward with the progress that we've seen in Milwaukee, we still need to really tackle the problem of income inequality. And I think that a good way to do that is to teach people how to start cooperative businesses, as well as incentivize current businesses to switch to a more cooperative model. One manufacturing plant in Milwaukee just did this recently. And I think it's also important to incentivize people who are entrepreneurs who are starting businesses to start their businesses in the impoverished areas of Milwaukee.
Steve, I want to jump in because we're just about out of time, and I want to get Colin to answer that. So leveraging the success here to help new entrepreneurs, new businesses, especially in impoverished areas, Colin.
It sounds like a good idea. This article wasn't focusing on income inequality, but it's obviously an issue that's enormously important, not only for Milwaukee, but for the country at large. And, finding ways to bridge that and new ideas for that is certainly a top priority thing in public policy in this country.
And as we wrap up, Colin, are people around the country watching this development in Milwaukee trying to learn lessons from it?
I hope so now. That's the hope, is that people are drawn their attention to the article and to the series, and it gives food for thought for people in other cities with similar challenges and perhaps opportunities.
Colin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Colin Woodard is a writer for Politico magazine. He's a contributing editor there. He joined us to talk about his recent article, How Milwaukee Shook Off the Rust, talking about redevelopment, industrial development in the once Rust Belt Menominee Valley area. You can read his piece, by the way, and share your comments, thoughts, and suggestions over on the Central Time Facebook page.